13 skulls. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this episode, we're going to be taking a look at the birth of Babylon. M Drive is producing a warp drive, a tin-lipped cow born in India, an apocalypse condo, the Min Min lights, and 10 places abandoned by society. That and a lot more in the 68th episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome back, everybody, to episode number 68 of the 13 Skulls. First and foremost, as soon as I start recording, my voice gets really scratchy. Not really sure why. Let's go ahead and go on with some of the opening stuff that I want to talk about. First, I hope you guys are doing good. I appreciate everybody for their positive feedback for episode 67 for the new shows that are coming out. A continuation of what was a couple of years ago into whatever it will be now in the future. So I really do appreciate it. There's been nothing but positive feedback. I really do appreciate you guys for listening and for coming back and for staying in touch. A lot of you guys out there have stayed in touch with me throughout the years, and it's just been it's been very heartwarming. It's been very great experience so far coming back. I did a Ramblecast on Project Archivist not too long ago. I just wanted to direct you guys over there. So if you haven't ever listened to the Project Archivist podcast, those guys, Rogan and Lobo, are fantastic. They're just good guys. They go together well. The personalities mix well together. They just have great content. It's a great show. We just talked about everything under the sun. I was jacked up on coffee. I had been drinking a lot of coffee because I was tired. I didn't even get much sleep. I was exhausted, drank a lot of coffee, and was hyped up, just rambling 1,000 words a minute. It was a lot of fun. So I really do appreciate you guys having me on, Rogan and Lobo. I'm going to be having them on in a couple of weeks. I'm not really sure. Haven't really worked out the details yet. I've been focusing on episode 68 and getting it out. But I will be having them on just to talk, to get to know them a little bit better and to just do another Ramblecast, talk about whatever comes up. The next thing that I wanted to bring up to you guys, there's actually a couple of different things. We're going to end on a rather odd note from an email that I got. But the next thing is, there's a game for anybody out there who has an Android device, a phone, a tablet, whatever. I think you can actually play it online too. There's a game called Limbo, L-I-M-B-O, Limbo. It's just a simple side-scrolling game. It's modern. It has great effects to it, great sound, especially the video. The graphics on it are fantastic. It's creepy, but it's simple. Everything is either black, white, or gray. How they put the game together is amazing. It really is a fantastic game, and I want you guys to at least go check it out. Now, granted, it will hog up the battery on your phone, on your tablet. You know, some tablets it's not compatible with, but it's a great game. I want you to go check it out. The next thing is, I'm going to post a video up to a vehicle that I saw not too long ago. It was a big, like, 2-ton military truck that had zombie outbreak response team on the side of it. I posted a video that I recorded while I was driving down the road. I saw it and knew I had to put it on the show. It's been a while since I saw it, but I talked to someone not too long ago who knows the guy who lives not too far away from me. So I'm going to see if I can get in contact with him and maybe get him on the show. You never know. Might not happen. I'm not really sure. The last thing before we get into the show that I wanted to talk about was an email that I got from Jay. Jay out there in Fort Worth. I'm not sure. Jay in Texas. You know who I'm talking about, man. If this was from you, let me know. But otherwise, it was an email from Jay. And it really is by far the weirdest email I have ever gotten from anyone at any point in time. And I have gotten some rather strange emails. It says, quote, "My name's Jay. I am a Polyon. The real one. I am an dark, gray, demonic devil extraterrestrial from God's side of the family. I am the Goid one. So there you go. Now you know who I am." I read that exactly how he typed it. So, few grammatical errors, which would be, you know, just to be expected with a demon trying to type out an email. It was weird. You know, to get this email, it kind of spooked me a little bit. I did a little bit of research on Apollyon, A-P-O-L-L-Y-O-N. And what I came up with is this. The name Abaddon or Apollyon appears in Revelation 9:11 in the Bible. Quote, "They had as king over them the angel of the abyss, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek, Apollyon. In Hebrew, the name Abaddon means place of destruction. The Greek title Apollyon literally means the destroyer. In Revelation 8:9, John describes a period during the end times when angels sound seven trumpets. Each trumpet signals the coming of a new judgment on the people of earth. When the fifth angel blows his trumpet, the abyss, a great smoking pit, will open, and a horde of demonic locusts will rise out of it. Revelation 9:1-3. These creatures will be given the power to torture any person who does not bear God's seal. The pain they inflict will be so intense that sufferers will wish to die. Abaddon, or Apollyon, is the ruler of the abyss and the king of these demonic locusts. Apollyon is often used as another name for Satan. However, scripture seems to distinguish the two. We find Satan later on in Revelation when he is imprisoned for 1,000 years in Revelation 20:1-3. He is then released to wreak havoc on the earth, verses 1-8, and ultimately receives his final eternal punishment. Abaddon, or Apollyon, is likely one of Satan's underlings, a destroying demon and one of the rulers, authorities, and powers mentioned in Ephesians 5:12. That was courtesy of gotquestions.org. To find out more, I'll post up links. There's a little bit more, not much, but a little bit more for you to read on that. There are related topics there describing what the bottomless pit in Revelations is. Dictionary.reference.com website. According to the New Testament, the destroyer, a name given to the devil, is Apollyon. It's late Latin Greek from the Apollyonai, to destroy totally. Apollyon is in the Bible the destroyer, the name given to the king of the hosts represented by the locust. And I got an email from him. All right, let's go ahead and move on to something that I heard about not too long ago that really it sparked my interest because of the potential of how old it is. This is courtesy of en.wikipedia.org. It's the Min Min Lights. It's a name given to the unusual light phenomenon that has often been reported in the outback in Australia. Now, Benjamin Grundy and Aaron Wright, I believe his last name is, down there in Australia with the Mysterious Universe podcast, have probably covered this, but I thought it was fascinating. I want to put it into the show. The name Min Min derives from the small settlement of Min Min located between the outback towns of Boolia and Winton, where the light was observed by a stockman in 1918. Stories about the lights can be found in Aboriginal myths predating European settlement and have since become part of a wider Australian folklore. Indigenous Australians, or Aborigines, hold that the number of sightings has increased along the increasing ingression of Europeans into the outback. According to folklore, the lights sometimes follow or approach people and have disappeared, sometimes very rapidly when fired upon. Reports of the phenomenon are widespread throughout Australia. The lights have been reported from as far south as Brewarrina in the west southern Wales to as far north as Boolia in the northern Queensland. Accounts of the lights' appearances vary, though they are most commonly described as being fuzzy, disc-shaped lights that appear to hover just above the horizon. They are often described as being white, though some accounts describe them as changing color from white to red to green and back again. Some accounts describe them as being dim, while others describe them as being bright enough to illuminate the ground under them and to cause nearby objects to throw clearly defined shadows. Some witnesses describe the lights as appearing to approach them several times before retreating. Others report that the lights were able to keep pace with them while they were in a moving car. Neuroscientist Jack Pettigrew has suggested that the Min Min lights is a form of Fata Morgana. Fata Morgana is an unusual and complex form of superior mirage that is seen in a narrow band right above the horizon. It is the Italian name for the Arthurian sorceress Morgan Le Fay. From a belief that these mirages, often seen in the Strait of Messina, were fairy castles in the air or false land created by her witchcraft to lure sailors to their death. There remains debate over whether it is a real phenomenon and what the putative source might be. It could be bioluminescence, geophysical lights, or refraction. There's another article that I wanted to get some information from. It's uq.edu.au. A UQ neuroscientist has revealed the probable basis of a bizarre Australian outback phenomenon that has baffled observers and scientists for centuries. I just thought that the Min Min lights were really fascinating. There's a lot more to this article here for you to go and take a look at. I'm getting back into doing shows again, and I'm having to knock off some rust. I'm having to really get back into the groove of it. So if it sounds like I'm a bit off, work with me here and bear with me. For all it's worth, I'm just trying to get back into it. Love doing the show, so what better way to do it than to just jump right back into it? The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of sciencemag.org. In an unusual press conference, NASA released a batch of bizarre sound recordings and video from the Messenger spacecraft moments before it impacted the surface of Mercury. Scientists are struggling to decipher what the data means, but some contend they sound like human voices crying out in agony. Messenger had been orbiting Mercury since 2011, but it used up nearly all of its propellant and was drifting closer to the surface of the planet. So, NASA officials decided to point the probe nose downward for a controlled crash. "We were hoping it would pick up some soot for spectroscopic analysis," said Messenger principal investigator Angra Mainyu, a planetary scientist at Columbia University. Just what it did find instead is not entirely clear. At the press conference, Mainyu played grainy recordings of what sounded like anguished voices in various languages, and she showed even grainier images of what appeared to be writhing figures. When asked by a reporter how NASA interpreted the data, Mainyu shrugged her shoulders and said, "How the hell should I know?" Reactions to the news were swift and in some cases decisive. Welcoming what he called ineluctable evidence of hell, Father Felix Flammis, a spokesperson for the Vatican Observatory in Italy, said, "This wonderful discovery shows that science and religion can work together to discover the truth." But Richard Dawkins, the famed evolutionary biologist and atheist, rejected the finding. "This is clearly a bunch of drivel," he says. "Wind whistling past the spacecraft, electronic noise. There's obviously has to be some other explanation. Even if the evidence holds up," he quips, "proof of the devil ain't the same as proof of God." Well, kind of it is. Because you couldn't have the devil without God, seeing as how it's supposed to be that the devil was created by God. So if you find something that, well, God created, then that is proof of God. So what is it exactly? I tried to find the audio, I tried my best. I tried to find the audio. I tried to find the video of what they said were writhing humans, or the pictures that were supposed to be writhing human beings in agony, but I couldn't. I'm not sure where it's at. I don't know if it's posted anywhere. I don't know if it came up and was posted after I found this article. I don't know. This article came out, what, 2 days ago? I believe it was 2 days ago. Today is the 2nd, so it came out yesterday. So I don't know if it's been posted or what. I couldn't tell you, but I haven't been able to find it. If I do find it, I will post it in the next show, or I'll just post it up, a link to it in the show notes. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of thedailytrends.net. A giant pentagon was found by Google Maps in an isolated region of Kazakhstan. The five-pointed star, surrounded by a circle located in the southern shore of the Upper Tobol Reservoir, the coordinates are there if you want to go take a look at it. There are almost no other signs of human habitation in the area. The closest settlement is in the city of Lysakovsk. At least I think that's how it's pronounced. I could be wrong. It's about 12 miles to the east of where this pentagon is said to be. It's an interesting picture if you go and take a look at it, because it just looks like a peninsula that sticks out. There's oceans on three of the four sides. And you can see where the trees are growing in the pentagon shape. It just makes me wonder, was it just something that somebody, I don't know, who owns the property wanted to do? I don't know. Anyway, I think it's really neat. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Let me know what you think about the Pentagon in Kazakhstan. All right, well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at, more of a website than anything else, it's Centauri-Dreams.org. It's imagining and planning interstellar exploration. The idea of crude, as in having a crew, not crude as in vulgar kind of crude, the idea of having a crewed solar electric spacecraft is hardly new. In 1954, Ernst Stuhlinger, I think I pronounced that correctly, proposed a sun ship powered by solar steam turbines and cesium ion drives. Since then, solar electric propulsion has been used in a wide variety of uncrewed spacecraft. Meanwhile, the convergence of several technologies will make crewed solar electric vehicles possible or feasible in the near future. What if a spacecraft like a cell was made mostly of water? That's what Alexander Tolley and Brian McConnell asked when they were working on a paper for the Journal of the British Interplanetary Society, a reference design for a simple, durable, and refuelable interplanetary spacecraft. The paper explored the idea of a crewed spacecraft that used water as a propellant in combination with solar electric propulsion. They were dubbed space coaches, as a nod to the stagecoaches of the Old West. Alex also gave the concept an excellent fictional treatment in Spaceward Ho, also published here on Centauri Dreams. You can go and look at them. Go to spacecoach.org. That's the next website that I wanted to direct you guys at. The website expands on the concept described in the last article that I was talking about, the paper that the guys wrote, that Brian McConnell and Alex Tolley wrote. The paper describes a design for the reusable spacecraft. They have the ideas for the timeline, the water cycle, the ship designers, and the concept art, which I thought was really the neatest part of it. You know, it's simple, it's easy, but yet I think it's functional in a way that you could actually make it work. But I don't know how well it's going to work once you get outside of the solar system, because you're going to need light too. You can't just run completely off of water. But anyway, I thought it was really interesting. Let's move on to something that's kind of on the same realm as that. It's courtesy of Disclosed.tv. And apparently MDRIVE is producing a warp drive. Anybody out there who likes Star Trek, they introduced the world outside of rocket science circles to the concept of a warp drive, the propulsion system that allowed the Starship Enterprise to travel faster than the speed of light. Warp speed is the holy grail that would let us explore the universe safely surrounded and protected by a space-distorting warp field. After watching the SpaceX rocket recently just try to land on a platform, you'd think this ability is years, if not decades, away. Yet the buzz on space websites is that NASA may have accidentally discovered a way to create a warp field. A warp field, in simple terms, basically you warp and bend the space around the spacecraft. Instead of completely bending the laws of physics for the whole universe, you only do it in the area surrounding the ship. It distorts it in a way that is like a wave pushing a surfer. Imagine a surfer is the ship and the wave is space and time, and it's pushing you through space, only to go faster and faster and faster and faster and faster, which might actually be the fastest way to get from point A to point B, unless you open up a wormhole. To get around the theory of relativity, physicist Miguel Alcubierre came up with the concept of a bubble of space-time which travels faster than the speed of light while the ship inside of it stays stationary. The bubble contracts space and time in front of the ship and expands it behind it. The warp drive would look like a football inside of a flat ring. The tremendous amount of energy it would need made this idea prohibitive until Harold Sonny White of NASA's Johnson Space Center calculated that making the ring into a donut shape would significantly reduce the energy needs. In the lab, NASA and other space programs were working on prototypes of the M-drive, or RF resonant cavity thruster, invented by British aerospace engineer Roger J. Schauer. The propulsion device uses a magnetron to produce microwaves for thrust, has no moving parts, and needs no reaction mass for fuel. In 2014, Johnson Space Center claimed to have developed its own low-power M-drive. There's a bit more to it here. I want you guys to go and read this for yourself. There's some pictures there of what is the prototype for the M-drive, for the magnetron microwave thrust system that they have. It's really cool. There's a good picture there of what it would look like if the ship was actually being pushed by space and time. I love science. I love space. I love the idea of traveling across the universe. It's fascinating. So I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Wait, it's interesting. So I want you guys to go take a drink because I said it's interesting. But I want you to go and take a look at the article. It really is. It's pretty cool stuff. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of openminds.tv. Dan Aykroyd explains UFO cover-up on the HuffPost show. Last Friday, Dan Aykroyd, now this has been about 2 weeks ago, I think, the conversation between the host and Dan Aykroyd turned to UFOs whenever Mark Lamont asked him about UFOs. I said, if I'm ever going to meet Dan Aykroyd, I'm going to ask him about that. You believe in UFOs, is that right? There was a slight hesitation by Aykroyd and a few giggles from off-camera, but Aykroyd headed straight into his answer. He said, quote, I do. I have seen four. And I can't say that they're alien craft, and neither can the Air Force. The Air Force has been very interested in this. They don't deny the existence of hydrodynamic, super aerodynamic craft. They don't deny. Although Aykroyd says the Air Force does not deny the existence of alien spacecraft, he explains why he thinks there's a cover-up of that information. He goes on to say, their anguish comes out in that they can't tell you. They want to tell you anything but that they are extraterrestrial, any excuse at all, even if they're unknown or unsolved. The Air Force cannot just come out and admit that there are extraterrestrial beings far in advance of our culture that have built these machines. Again, there's more to it here. He goes on to different accounts of what happened to him, what happened to his driver. Go and read it. It really is neat. I thought it was interesting because it's Dan Aykroyd, great actor. I love everything that he's been in. I don't know about him as a person, but for anybody who has any celebrity to them at all to come out and say something like that, you know, they're putting, at least to some degree, their, not necessarily their career, but how people look at them on the line, and they get in the public eye a lot. But then again, it could just get him in the public eye. You never know. I don't know. I just thought it was really interesting that he was talking about UFOs. All right, we're going to take a bit of a break here. We're going to come back in just a minute. We're going to be taking a look at Telling Time by Color, the real Hollywood haunted film that will scare you for life. And four people were arrested for dealing in albino body parts. So we got some more good stuff outside of that, including the Manure Expo. So you guys stay put, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Do you know my name? No one ever can. The days are over.
right, welcome back, everybody. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of manchester.ac.uk. Research by scientists at the University of Manchester have revealed that the color of light has a major impact on how our body clock measures the time of day. You would think that this would just be a normal thing that everybody would think about. You know, when the sun starts coming up, you know it's morning. When the sun goes down, you know it's time to go to bed. When the sun's in the middle of the sky, you know it's the middle of the day. The article goes on to say, it's the first time the impact of color has been tested and demonstrates that color provides a more reliable way of telling the time than measuring brightness. In a paper published on April 20th in the open access journal PLOS Biology, the researchers looked at the change in light around dawn and dusk to analyze whether color could be used to determine time of day. Besides the well-known changes in light intensity that occur as the sun rises and sets, they found that during twilight, light is reliably bluer than during the day. The scientists next recorded electrical activity from the body clock while mice were shown different visual stimuli. They found that many of the cells there were more sensitive to changes in color between blue and yellow than changes in brightness. The scientists then used measurements of the changes in the color spectra taken from the top of the university's Parisser building to construct an artificial sky which recreated the daily changes in color and brightness. Mice were placed beneath the sky for several days and their body temperatures were recorded. As expected for nocturnal creatures, the highest body temperatures occurred just after night fell when the sky turned a darker blue, indicating that their body clock was working optimally. When just the brightness of the sky was changed with no change in color, then mice became more active before dusk, demonstrating that their body clock wasn't properly aligned to the day-night cycle. Dr. Timothy Brown from the Faculty of Life Sciences led the research and said, "This is the first time that we've been able to test the theory that color affects the body clock in mammals. It's always been very hard to separate the change in colors to the change in brightness, but using experimental tools and a psychophysics approach, we were successful." He continues, "What's exciting about our research is that the same findings can be applied to humans. So in the theory, color could be used to manipulate our clock, which could be useful for shift workers. I just thought it was interesting. Take a drink." All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of moviepilot.com. The title of this article, to me, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's really worth what the title says. The real Hollywood haunted film that will scare you for life. Now, this article says, "Hello, my name is Akari Keksky. Today, I have a few questions for you. Do you believe in demons? What about ghosts? Do you think that they can interact with us? Are they capable of communicating? Is our modern equipment capable of capturing them on film and video?" Many people say that tons of photographic and recorded evidence of paranormal events do exist. In turn, there are those that claim that this supposed evidence is just an ill-intended fraud, and others that will give scientific and rational explanations to refute it. But there is evidence out there that nobody, not even the clever and more skeptical among us, has been able to disprove. There's a film that has captured, unwillingly and unexpectedly, supposedly paranormal evidence that has baffled skeptics and believers alike. The film is named Return to Babylon, and it is as haunted as any recording can be. According to the director of the movie, Alex Monte Kanawati, he and his friend, the producer, found inside a garbage bag a strange collection of old tapes filmed in the 1940s. The duo used those to create a short film named The Birth of Babylon. It was successful enough to secure a sequel. Return to Babylon was filmed using old cameras in black and white, using 16 frames per second. The director managed to get several known actors and actresses for the film, such as Maria Conchita Alonso and Jennifer Tilly. The sinister events started to happen during the filming. The crew felt the presence of strange energies and bizarre entities. Jennifer Tilly herself states that she could even feel the spirits touching her multiple times. After the film was finished, the director and the editor noticed something strange and nefarious in the negatives. There were demons and horrible creatures manifested in there. Several experts have analyzed the negatives and have found nothing wrong. They say that no one manipulated them. These are no special effects. Some theories floating around indicate that the film was recorded at real haunted locations and that the spirits and ghosts in there were imprinted in the movie. Now, there is the video here, and the guy who directed the movie, who produced the movie, talks about what he sees in the movie and the significance of them. Personally, I think the photographs are of what's going on in the movie rather than the clip itself are what's so creepy about it. There are what appear to be demonic beings and people in these videos. It's interesting. It really is. No, it really is interesting to me. It could just be that these people wanted this movie to be this way to draw attention to it. They dress these people up to look like demons and just to get attention. But at the same time, you can't really say that they're doing that just because it's in their footage. You never know. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. I want you to watch the video and let me know what you think about it. The article goes on to say the rational and logical explanation is that the conversion from tape at 16 frames per second to digital video at 24 frames per second merged the frames, giving the impression that something paranormal was happening. It's really weird because it goes on to say what's in the video: diabolic claws, evil grimaces, long twisted noses, and what appears to be some sort of demonic guy, like a burlap sack dress kind of thing, walking across a scene of like fog in the woods. It's bizarre to say the least. And I want you guys to go watch the video, look at it. If you have watched the video, let me know. If you have watched anything, just to see how scary it is and see if it really will scare me for life. All right, the next article is courtesy of HuffingtonPost.com. A 10, yes, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, lipped cow was born in northern India. A cow at a dairy farm in Narnaul in northern India recently gave birth to the cow named Nandi or Nandi. It's a nickname for Lord Krishna and can also mean one who pleases others. Although Nandi or Nandi has five mouths, he could only drink milk out of two of them, according to Naj.com. Local vet Sukhbir Singh said that the calf is healthy and thriving, but his head is so distorted that he can only see to the side. You know, I feel sorry for the poor little guy. I really do. You know, it's adorable. It's kind of a weird freak of nature, but it's cute. It's a cute little animal. I feel for it having to go through life with the complications and the problems that it has. I wonder how long it'll live. I find stuff like this to be bizarre. You know, it was supposed to be twins, but they never split. Or, well, God, more than twins. It should have been like five different cows, but seeing as how cows are revered in India, this thing will probably live a very luxurious, very good life. So anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of ManureExpo.com. I had never in my life knew that there was a manure expo. It makes sense. It really does, because there is a lot of manure in this world. In America, one of the biggest things we have here is beef. We were just talking about cows, and there's a lot of manure in the world, be it coming from pigs or poultry or cows or horses or any other type of animal out there. From July 14th to the 15th of 2015 in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. And their little slogan is, manure than you can handle. It's funny. I'm sorry. It really is kind of funny. But here, there's a video there that you can go and watch, 2 minutes and 45 seconds long, talking about the Manure Expo. If you're into manure, you have a lot of manure, maybe you're going to want to go check it out. They're going to be doing dairy and agitation tours, poultry tours, equine and beef small farm tours, and then the main event is on Wednesday, July 15th. I want you to go check it out. If you're into manure, it should be interesting. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of HuffingtonPost.com. Would you want to be trapped in an escape room just for fun? Now, this article is written by Amy Heckel. She said, for this night out, we were locked in. It's me, seven friends, and 60 minutes in a locked room. All technology and cell phones stay behind. The door locks behind us, and the clock starts. The task is, can we figure out how to get out of the room before time's up? And not everyone does. In a part detective, part puzzle solver, and total live-action real-life video game complete with a detailed backstory and carefully crafted scenery, all within four confined walls. The story is about a missing professor set in their early 50s. They were vaguely instructed to search for the room for hidden clues and figure out how to unlock the door. Clues are everywhere, according to what the staff says. As soon as the door locked behind them, they realize anything might be a clue. It's really neat. I would love to do something like this, to go into a room like this, because I love puzzle games. There's a game out there for Android. I love playing games on my phone whenever I have a chance. There's a game called The Room, and it's like an escape thing. You have to go and do different things and solve little puzzles. And like Limbo that I was telling you about earlier, I love puzzle games, and I think this would be really fascinating. It'll probably be a lot harder than you would think to do, but if you want to do it, there's more here that you can go and read and find out more about how you might be able to go and do this. I thought it was really interesting. All right, let's move on to the next article before we take another break. It's courtesy of dailycamera.com. It is a mermaid, unicorn, and dragons exhibit. Science doesn't explain everything. It doesn't explain very much at all, really. You realize the depths of the holes in our understanding of the world when you have a kid. Kid brains are unchained and cage-free. There are a few magical years where kids don't discern a distinction between fantasy and reality, at least as adults limit it, and they're old enough to share it with us. Beyond the questions that are impossible to answer, what do you think that cloud is feeling? His daughter asked him about a robot from outer space and all kinds of different things, like unicorns and mermaids. And my little daughter plays around all the time asking about that kind of stuff, and that's what drew me to this article. She loves unicorns, she loves fairies, she loves mermaids, she loves all of that stuff, and to even think for a second that any of it could possibly be real is awesome. The Denver Museum of Nature and Science's new exhibition, Mythic Creatures, examines the concepts of myths via fossils and cultural objects that express this modernly disregarded sliver of our history and souls. The exhibition also shows how science has evolved from proof of unicorns via a narwhal tusk from the North Sea or ancient elephant skulls as proof of the Cyclops. There's more of personal experience and stuff that this woman goes on to talk about, and I want you to just go and read it, see for yourself a little bit about the exhibit. It's Mythical Creatures, Dragons, Unicorns, and Mermaids. It runs through September 7th at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, 2001 Colorado Boulevard in Denver. Tickets are $14.95 for adults, $9.95 for children 3 to 18, and $11.95 for anyone 65 and older. Their phone number there, there's the website that you can go and check them out. It's the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. It runs from March 20th, so it's going now. Go check it out if you're in Denver and you go to this exhibit. Let me know how it was. I really want to know. Let me know how it was. Anybody out there, I know some people out in Denver. If you go, let me know. I want to hear about it because I found this to be really fascinating because I'm always talking to my daughter, playing with her about unicorns and mermaids and dragons even. So I just thought it was really interesting. So we're going to go ahead and take a little bit of a break here. When we get back, we're going to be talking about cannibal gangs that admit to killing and eating women, a survival condo, and 10 places that have been abandoned by society. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
For newly released horror movie reviews on DVD and Blu-ray with super horror movie recommendations, all visible via video podcast, we present the Ultimate Horror Podcast Network. Horror House. Featuring on video, Grizzly Zone, the Extreme Horror Podcast. Check us out at www.horrorpalace.com.
Project Archivist, the podcast that talks about the weird, the wonderful, and the strange. Join us every week as your hosts Rogan and Lobo take a different look at the world around us through guest interviews, discussion, or taking a look at the week's weirdest news. Find us at www.projectarchivist.com, on iTunes in the podcast section, or on the Stitcher Android app.
All All right. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go ahead and move on. I had to get a new phone. I noticed that on some of the settings, there was one in particular that caught my eye and made me wonder about it. In the emergency alert section, you can, you know, sign up for Amber Alerts and tornado warnings and stuff like that that are local to my area. Well, one of them was presidential alerts. They are mandatory. Now, the rest of the settings on there for the Amber Alerts and stuff, you can turn them off. Should presidential alerts on your phone be mandatory? I kind of am taking an issue with this simply for the fact that I think it's not necessarily an invasion of privacy, but if I want to tune out the government, I should be able to. If I wanted to say, I don't want to hear what the president has to say, I should be able to turn it off. Now, granted, I know that the presidential alerts that are going to come on your phone are going to be something of a substantially significant nature, something that's going to affect me. But there's a bit of me that's saying that I should be able to disconnect from that. If the president is giving a speech on TV, I can turn the TV off. I don't have to have it on. You know, with this on my phone, I cannot turn it off. And I don't like the idea that I'm being forced to do this. Now, granted, it's something simple and probably beneficial for me, but I just have an issue with not being able to disconnect from it if I want to be able to turn it off. If in a same line of thought, this involved what I just said about the president giving a speech on TV, then I wouldn't be able to turn my TV off when the president was there talking. It would be forced upon me to watch the TV. I don't think this is unfair in a way, but it's not necessarily fair either. I should have the ability to turn it off. That's what I think. But anyway, what do you think about that? Should you have the ability to completely disconnect yourself from the government, at least in some other form than owing them money, you know, paying your taxes, that kind of stuff? I think the government has too much control. Is it Big Brother? Is it another sign of Big Brother, even though it's insignificant and most people wouldn't find it? I look for things like this, so that's just how my brain works. I find it interesting. Let's go ahead and move on to something else that I found to be interesting. It's the controversialfiles.net. And this one's courtesy of Rojan out there at the Project Archivist. He sent this to me. A cannibal gang admits killing women to eat them and even made pies and sold them. News about a woman with her husband and his mistress that was said to be cannibals have gone viral. The cannibals were accused of hunting and killing women to cook them to make pies as their meal. Worst is, they also made the pies for public consumption as they also sold it to their neighbors. The three of them got in the city of Garenhoons and admitted to their crimes. Now, something I'm just going to mention here is that these people, even though it's funny how people look normally, and then how they present themselves to the public, they have these pictures of these people, I guess they're mug shots or just random pictures of them, and they look pretty messed up, you know, like they've been doing drugs. But then you have three of them sitting in court, and they don't look the same. They look more normal, like you would think someone to be whenever you see them just sitting at the DMV or something. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting how people are in private and how they are in public is a strange thing. The three cannibals were identified as Jorge Beltreo Negromonte da Silveira, his wife Isabel Cristina Pires, and mistress Bruna Cristina Oliveira da Silva admitted to their crimes. They confessed that they lured innocent women to work for them as a nanny without knowing they will be their meals. The three even shared that they are part of a sect that aims to be the purification of the world and the reduction of its population. I committed a horrible, monstrous mistake. It was a moment of extreme weakness and brutality that I regret, said Jorge Beltreo Negromonte da Silveira during his trial. Aside from the three cannibals living under the same roof, there is also a young child who lives with them. He was also fed the pastries made from human meat. During police investigation of the cannibals' house, they discovered a book that consists of 50 pages with the title Revelations of a Schizophrenic. The book was said to be written by Mr. Negromonte da Silveira. The book features his journey into addiction to killing women. He started liking their voices, which were asking for help. Time passed, and he became an obsessed murderer to women. I don't know if this is necessarily their house or if it's been demolished or what, but picture they're showing here is pretty bad. Maybe this is just where they killed the women. I don't know. Either way, I found it to be disturbing and rather interesting. Now, I wanted to, we're going to move on to another article, which is courtesy of the HuffingtonPost.co.uk. Again, I know there's been a lot of HuffPost stuff in here today. I'm not really sure why, but there is.
The fear of the apocalypse has scared people for centuries. But now, if the world is meant to end, there's a condo complex built to withstand it. Named the Luxury Survival Condo, the facility was originally constructed as a nuclear ballistic missile silo in Kansas and comprises two underground buildings, including one 14 stories tall with over 54,000 square feet of space. Reaching 174 feet deep, the tall structure offers two different types of units. Full floor ones are 1,820 square feet and can accommodate 10 people, while half floor units are 900 feet and can house 5 occupants. Units range in price from $1.5 to $3 million, and not only have they all been purchased, there's also a waiting list. Developer Larry Hall is behind the project, and he's already working on a second condo complex.
His team has thought of everything. Deep wells and water tanks, a windmill, generators, and backup battery power.
While the silos Hall is using are meant to withstand a nuclear bomb, he didn't forget to include all the amenities normally seen in an urban high-rise. The complex has a pool, dog park, a gym, a spa, and medical facility. Each unit also comes fully furnished and is equipped with stainless steel appliances. A 5-year food supply for each person is also included, and water is supplied from purified well and rainwater.
The whole trick to having long-term off-grid survival capability is normalcy. To make things as normal as you can for as long as you can.
It's possible that other decommissioned nuclear silos could be converted into condos, and other doomsday shelter options are also available, albeit not as luxurious.
So there you go. For $1 million to $3 million, you get to survive the apocalypse for 5 years. The reason I say 5 years is because you get 5 years worth of food. So possibly less than that, depending on how much you're eating. I mean, is it going to be rationed? Is the food going to be rationed out to you on a daily basis, or do you just get to eat as you want? And what happens if somebody else eats more than everybody else and they run out of food? Do you have to share your food with them? Do you have to share food with somebody who eats all their food in 3 years? So what happens? You cut everybody's time down by 6 months because you're having to share your food? How does it work? I found it to be really interesting that people are building these things, that they're sold out, that there's a waiting list. I mean, is that a sign of something to come? Or are there just that many people on the planet who have that kind of money to waste? I say waste. It's a good safety blanket to get on. I mean, if you live close enough to get to it, I mean, if you live on the opposite side of the planet, it's going to be kind of hard to get there during the apocalypse. I just thought it was really interesting. So let's go ahead and move on to the last article here, which is courtesy of criticals.com. 10 places that have been abandoned by society. We're going to go and start with number 10, the Willard Asylum in New York. It was for chronic insane people in upstate New York, operated from 1869 to 1995. Many regular people were deemed insane and sent to the hospital to receive intensive psychiatric care for those things as normal as being promiscuous or gay, and once admitted, most never left the asylum. It is said that the patients were abused and tortured throughout the early decades of the building's operation. Many were left confined without clothing or a bed, never to see the light of day again. When patients died, they were buried in unmarked graves, and their possessions were locked away in a secret attic to be forever forgotten. More than half of the 50,000 patients who called Willard Asylum their home died within its walls. So that's 25,000 people that had died in this place. Next is Verotia in Cyprus. Verotia is a completely uninhabited city on the coast of Cyprus. From afar, it looks bustling, but it is completely dead, remaining abandoned since the Turkish invasion of Cyprus in 1974. What you'll see in this is a city with a beach, there's houses, there's trees, and then there's nothing. There's no people, there's no nothing. It's rather fascinating. All right, let's move on to number 8. Six Flags Jazzland in New Orleans. Anything in New Orleans is cool. It's also creepy. Six Flags Jazzland was shut down and abandoned in 2005 as a result of the devastating effects caused by Hurricane Katrina. Today, the 140-acre surreal setting is a very popular zone for urban exploration, as it remains nothing but a nightmarish land of crumbling scenes and unnatural silence. Go and take a look. If this picture is of this place, it is what you would expect to see in the apocalypse. It is creepy, bizarre, but yet oddly beautiful. It really is. All right, number seven is Sanzi UFO houses in Taiwan. These houses were originally intended to be part of a luxury resort, but after numerous fatal accidents, the government quickly shut down the project in the 1980s. Since then, it has been surrounded by much secrecy, and even the locals will not dare to venture near the death pods of Sanzi. They're pretty cool looking. I mean, they're purple, brown, red, and yellow, and they're like pods on a center shaft that is, you know, like a central building with these pods that stick out to the side that really do look like UFOs. It's a beautiful landscape. It really is. But, you know, people died there, so apparently they just had to shut it down. It's oddly pretty in and of itself, especially the landscape. So let's go ahead and move on to number six, was Pavilia Island in Italy. Pavilia Island near Italy has been the site of many horrors over the years. The island initially served as a dumping ground for plague victims during the Roman era, and again when the Black Death rolled through Europe, the dead dumped into large pits and buried or burned. As the population began to panic over the deadly pandemic, many people who showed even the slightest signs of sickness were thrown onto piles of rotting corpses and burned alive. In 1922, the island became home to a mental hospital where a doctor allegedly experimented on patients with crude lobotomies. He later threw himself over the hospital tower after claiming he had been driven mad by ghosts. Some estimates suggest that over 100,000 people died on the island over the centuries. Today, the island is considered so dangerously haunted that the Italian government forbids public access. Number 5. Mirny Diamond Mine in Russia. The Mirny Diamond Mine project was commenced by Stalin in 1957 to satisfy the Soviets' demand for industrial diamond. Despite the mine's production over 10 million carats of diamond annually through the 1960s, further digging efforts were soon abandoned due to the constant flooding and frozen grounds. Today, the abandoned mine remains the world's second largest man-made hole. Go take a look at it. This thing is awesome. I mean, it's probably 3 city blocks wide and probably 3 city blocks deep. You can even see where the roads for the trucks drove around in a spiral pattern going down the center of the hole. It's pretty bizarre. Number 4. Holy Land, USA, in Waterbury, Connecticut. Holy Land was a theme park built in 1955, inspired by selected passages from the Bible. At its peak in the 1960s, the park attracted over 40,000 visitors each year. Holy Land was closed down in 1984, but its grounds still remain intact. This would be a really cool place to go visit, just because it would be so creepy. I mean, it really would be one of the creepiest places to go visit. That's just bizarre. All right, we're down to the top 3. Hashima Island in Japan. In the early 1900s, Hashima Island was a bustling coal mining town owned by the Mitsubishi Corporation. Things took a turn for the worse once World War II began as the Japanese turned the settlement into a labor camp for Korean and Chinese prisoners. The island possessed the highest population density on the planet, 139,100 people per square kilometer. That's a lot of people. You'd be standing side by side the whole time. You couldn't ever, there would be no privacy. By 1959, and the conditions quickly deteriorated as a result. Fortunately, petroleum soon replaced coal as Japan's main source of fuel, leaving the island completely abandoned and degraded. It's remained that way for the last 38 years. Number 2 is Cincinnati's abandoned subway. The city of Cincinnati has plans to build a subway system in the early 1900s. The city ran out of funding before the project was completed, but the tunnels that were constructed are still open beneath the city, a maze left to be explored. Would you go in there? I'm sure there are homeless people in some of them, but would you go in there even by yourself with a group of friends? Would you go in there? I would go in there for sure. And give me a gun and a flashlight and some food and some extra batteries. I would definitely go in there by myself. All right, and the number one creepiest place to be abandoned by society is Pripyat in Ukraine. This city had a bustling population of 50,000 people before the nearby Chernobyl nuclear explosion in 1986. Pripyat was quickly evacuated and has been abandoned ever since due to radiation and will likely remain that way for thousands of years. Nature now rules the city that has been transformed into a post-apocalyptic setting. What I find to be interesting about this place especially is that if there is so much radiation there for people not to be able to live there, why is it that there is still life there? What is causing all of this life, such as trees, for example? I mean, there's a lot of trees there and they still look alive. Why are they still alive and people can't live there? What's so different about their makeup that can allow them to withstand it? I understand that there's a lot of biological differences between a human and a tree. I understand that. But I'm just wondering why it is that life can still be there, but we can't. Is there something we don't know about? So let's go ahead and take one last break and we'll close out the show. There's nothing that God can give to me that I can give to myself. I put my beliefs in the things I believe in, and God can take care of himself. There's not enough love in the world for me to think about wasting my time. It's not that I don't believe at all, but I don't need a heavenly sign. I can achieve the things I need without getting down on my knees. I can respect your religion, but I don't want to pay your fees. I don't want to hear you talk about the things you think that I need. So don't help me back on my feet again until you can hear me please. Just look in the holy book of groups and tell me what you can find. All the rules and the regulations made to manipulate your mind. Don't pretend that you're blind, just open your mind to study historical times. The bigger the loss, the bigger the cost, the bigger the cross on his crime. I don't believe in the God that I need to worship. Well, guys, girls, ladies, and gentlemen, I really do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. I want to give a big thank you to Luke at A Case for Horatio. The second song in the show today is theirs. It's Not Dead Yet. I believe they're from the UK. You can find them on Facebook if you search for A Case for Horatio. I really do appreciate it, Luke, for you sending these to me. You did it a couple years ago. If I can, I will post a link up to their Facebook page so you can go find them in the show notes for the episode. But thank you again, Luke. I really do appreciate it. Since it is the end of the show, let's go ahead and bury the formalities and get them in the dirt and out of the way. If you want to subscribe to the show, if you're just listening to it through Stitcher or something along those lines, you want to subscribe to it through the feeds, you can go to the13skulls.com. That's www.the13skulls.com. You can find the feed stuff there. It's in there. If you want to listen through Stitcher, there is a link on the website on the right sidebar. Just scroll down. You'll see a box there with the Stitcher logo. Just click on it and that'll take you to Stitcher, to my page. You can also find me on Instagram. I am at the13skulls. I love Instagram. It's a great, great app. I love it. Great website. You can find me on Facebook.com. That's facebook.com/the13skulls. I'm on Google Plus at the13skulls, and Twitter, I'm at the13skulls there too. Pretty much at the13skulls wherever you look, I should be there. And I'm always wanting to promote independent bands, so if you have somebody that you know, or if you have a band yourself, and you want to submit music that would fit into the show, please send it to me. Contact me, let me know. I'd love to put it into the show, get you some promotion. I want to give a shout out again to Rojan and Lobo out there at Project Archivist. You guys are great. I appreciate you having me on. Go check them out. They have a great podcast. I was on there not too long ago. It was fantastic. I absolutely love them. I will be having them on here on this show. Probably in a couple of weeks. I'm not really sure. We're going to have to figure it out, get all the details together, figure out whenever they can get on there. And, you know, we're just going to find out more about them and maybe do some rambling as well. It's a lot of fun to just sit back and talk. If you have any experiences that you want to share with me, any feedback that you want to share with me, you can email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. Or you can call me and tell me your feedback at 817-986-0019. Leave me a review in iTunes. There's also a link to subscribe to the iTunes feed through the FeedBurner website. Thank you to all of you who have left me reviews in the past. I really do appreciate it. Again, you can listen to me through Stitcher. I'm at the13skulls there. It's on the right sidebar. Just scroll down on the website. You can find it there at 13skulls.com. Some of the music here is music that I've already played in previous episodes. I'm looking for new music all the time, but I'm not finding a whole lot, so I'm reusing some of the old music from previous episodes. But some of the music might be provided by Mevio's Music Alley, or you can check them out at music.mevio.com, or some of the music might be courtesy of the freemusicarchive.org, or like I said, it's being used from a previous episode. The sound effects that have been in the show are in the show or being used in the show or have ever been used in the show are courtesy of freesound.org. The Free Sound Project is just fantastic. I love it. It's where I get all of my sound effects. I love that place. I will post links up to everything you heard about in the show notes. If you have a podcast, radio show, book, or anything at all you want to send me a promo for it, I would be more than honored and happy to put it into the show. I love being able to promote other people's stuff. Well, everyone, I hope you guys are having a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this, and I will talk to you guys again on another day. Whatever beliefs belong to this, there's always a reason to doubt, and there's always another opinion as to what life is all about. There's always a bigger dimension and a different point of view, so I don't want to try to change you, that decision is up to you. Whatever your final choices and however you choose to live, you better be happy for what you can get and happy for what you can give. There's only one thing to remember, there is only one thing you can do, and that is to do what to others as you'd have others do what to you.
See all the things that I can do.